Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 91. Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet, SteelersDepot.com. David Todd from TheHammerSpeaks.com. And Dave, first off, thanks for being a guest on Saverin on Sports with me this morning. For any of those of you who want to hear that, you can go to ESPN970.com and 970ESPN.com, sorry, and listen to the click on the podcast, and Dave was a guest in segment two, I think, at 10:30, and we spoke for about 15, 20 minutes. There'll be a little overlap today, but I appreciate you taking the time, as always.
No problem. In fact, I got long-winded. You had to cut me off, didn't you?
Well, we got up against the commercial there at the top of the hour, so yeah, we had to cut it a little bit short.
I'm not used to having to deal with those hard breaks.
Yeah, exactly, the hard break, exactly. Dave, I guess the interesting stuff today, and then we'll go back on some of the stuff that happened earlier this week, is it's Tuesday. The owners' meeting's taking place in Palm Beach, Florida. This isn't a time for a lot of real hard news, but it is a time where Mike Tomlin addresses the media. A fair number of Pittsburgh media members are actually down there, and they had a lot to report on what he said this morning. I know you've transcribed some of that stuff on your website this morning, and it sounds like generally – it's just a little bit of the Steelers' State of the Union, more or less.
Yeah, it was, and I always like little nuggets and all like this. This is the beauty of social media these days, because normally we would not hear a lot of this stuff that had been talked about at the owners' meeting for 3 or 4 days in the papers and filtered down that way. But a few things that stuck out to me, and then I'll have you kind of say a few things that stuck out to you. You know, and we talked about this on your show this morning on ESPN 970 as well. You know, I have been kind of fearful about Emmanuel Sanders all this time, about him and these foot injuries, and how it kind of scares me with all the procedures that he's had done, the time that he missed last year and all. And it seems like this is kind of weighing on Tomlin's mind as well, too. I mean, there was no reason. It's not like you can send a message to a player because he's getting injured. Of course, players don't get injured on purpose. But he spoke pretty bluntly about Sanders and tackle Willie Colon, and concern about their, you know, they remain healthy for longer periods of time. Colon, of course, has missed all but one game for the past two seasons, tearing an Achilles. And, of course, he had that triceps injury last year, week one, against the Baltimore Ravens. And we all know about Sanders, his first 2 years in the league. So I found that, you know, pretty good talking point this morning. Also, the other thing, you know, I love to track these pre-draft visitors, David. I think it really presents a window into what the Steelers do during the draft. I had good success with my final mock draft last year, and a lot of that success I point to knowing the needs and knowing the pre-draft visitors that it came in. And Tomlin let it be known today that Ohio State tackle Mike Adams, Florida International wide receiver T.Y. Hilton, and Cincinnati Bearcats defensive lineman Derek Wolfe all made pre-draft visits last week. And, of course, the University of Pittsburgh players, who do not count against the 30 official visit list, have also made their pre-draft visits as well. So those are two things that stuck out to me. How about what stuck out to you this morning?
Yeah, I think the second point there, I agree with you. I think that's really good information. One of the things that we have seen over the years is, I also had on the show on Monday, I had Sigmund Bloom, who does some great stuff for Bleacher Report and Football
Guys. Football Guys.
Yeah, footballguys.com site. We talked about some of this stuff. The Steelers aren't a team that tries to be particularly cagey about their needs or put a lot of smoke screens up there. They're willing to talk about who comes to visit, and that's appropriate because in today's day and age, it really is virtually impossible to keep that stuff quiet. You don't ask the player not to talk about what teams he visited. So, yeah, the names that you mentioned, I really did like the fact that the kid from Florida International, the receiver, T.Y. Hilton, is a really interesting guy. For those of you who watch a lot of college football, you might have seen him a couple times early in the season when they were on TV in some of the very early games before we got into the conference schedule. And then he was in a bowl game late. Both times put up really big numbers. He's a guy who there are clearly issues with this guy, and we can get into some of that later, but he's a guy who is a burner, and he's projected to go around the third round, or the last time I looked, he was projected to be like a third round receiver. We've seen guys like him before who don't necessarily make it, so there's some size issues, some other things. But yeah, Mike Adams, you talked about, a guy who's probably going to go toward the back half of the first round, a big tackle, and certainly that's something the Steelers could talk about. And I just, on that topic, Dave, I wanted to talk to you about the article you wrote about Willie Colon potentially moving inside. This is something that gets brought up every now and then. Willie Colon is a guy who can move inside. The Steelers aren't blessed with a ton of tackles at the moment, and they have they're weaker at guard in terms of the depth chart than they are at tackle in terms of their starters. So it's not like Colon is going to move inside today or maybe even ever, but it's a topic that gets discussed. And with Mike Adams taking a visit, we might as well talk about it here. Why don't you pontificate a little bit more about that?
Well, first of all, Colbert has said in various interviews, and even, you know, even tracking his track record back in the draft, he is a guy that is not afraid to go best player available, you know, and kind of moving along with, you know, taking into account need somewhat. He pretty much had made it clear, and he does pretty much every year as well, too, just because, you know, you would think that the primary need would be an interior right or left guard in this draft, which it is. You know, even with Ramon Foster and Doug Legursky going to be signing their one-year tenders. He's not going to shy away if there's a guy on the board that presents good value that drops in that first round. If he happens to be a tackle, then so be it. I mean, as you said, look at the tackle position right now. You've got Marcus Gilbert supposedly going to be moving over to the left side. Willie Colon coming off basically two full years of only playing one game at right tackle. And I've been on board with Colon possibly kicking inside for a while. It just never has happened. Will it ever happen? Maybe not. But, you know, if there is a guy out there that they deem to be the best player on the board, higher rated than maybe an interior guy that they have, don't be surprised, you know, if they take him. Now, is Mike Adams that guy? This is a guy that's got a lot of baggage in his Ohio State days. That's probably one of the reasons they brought this kid in, is to give him a full workover. It wouldn't be surprising if they met with him at the combine as well. So just because they had him in for a visit, they might be trying to sift through all the information on him. But I would not rule out, you know, a tackle being taken. Now picking that low in the first round, you tend to figure all of your good left tackle types are going to be off the board. But should one fall, you know, I would not be willing to rule that out just yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other things about comments from Mike Tomlin, yeah, of course, as a head coach, I think you have to be aware of every possibility and have plans for different contingencies. And you have to know that if Manny Sanders or Willie Colon gets hurt, that you have depth at those positions and you can go to. And if there's a history of injury there, you have to certainly be more, I guess, you know, you feel like the probability of another injury occurring is more likely. I don't think the Manny Sanders thing is a chronic thing. When he's healthy at the end of the year, you'd like to think that he's past that. Obviously, he's not growing anymore, so that shouldn't be an issue, but we'll see. He needs to put a full 16-game schedule behind him, as does Willie Colon, for people to, I think, feel comfortable that, you know, he's going to be able to go out there and give his best every week. So I think it's a fair topic and a fair point to be concerned about. The other things that weren't really addressed that aggressively, though, that are happening down there is some of the rule changes. We may see those get enacted. We've talked about them a little bit in the past. The overtime rule change, just having consistency. They would adopt the playoff overtime rule change full time. The other ones that are somewhat interesting are the injured reserve issue, where you might be able to bring a player back halfway through the season if he's injured in training camp or in the first week or so of the season, and then having all replays subject to booth review and having the decision made in the booth by a full-time replay official. That to me is a very important one, and I think that would be a positive all the way around.
Yeah, I agree, and I tell you, the one that I wrote about specifically was that injured reserve rule, and we'll have to see how this, the official ruling, kind of, you know, it's kind of been highlighted as a fact that a player needs to be on the 53-man roster week one to qualify, you know, for an 8-week trip to injured reserve. Now, I think there's still some gray area there. You know, my question would be is, what if you have a guy that's on the practice squad, you call him up week two or week three, he gets injured. It's not a year-ending injury. Could that guy be placed on the 8-week temporary injured reserve? You can only do this with one player, evidently. Now, that brings into question, what about a guy like Max Starks? His name has also been thrown around quite a bit. This is a guy that you know, he very well could be ready by the start of week one of the season. You know, I think it'd be pushing it to expect him to be in training camp coming off this ACL injury. There seems to be some interest in bringing him back next year, possibly for depth purposes. Maybe this is a smokescreen of sorts as well, kind of leading up to the draft.
We've heard that more from him than the team at this point, right?
Well, I mean, Colbert has addressed that as well, too. You know, that it's a guy that they could have interest in bringing back. So I think the interest is on both sides. I don't know if they're just being polite and cordial on the Steelers side saying that. But, you know, what I'm alluding to, David, is, you know, is this a guy that you have on your roster week one? Let's say that rule stipulates that the player has to be on your week one roster. And if he's not ready by week one, is it worth him taking a roster spot for week one of the season and then following week one, throwing him on that 8-week injured reserve that way? In my opinion, no, it's not. Why would you want to use your one-time deal on a player coming off an ACL injury that's more than likely not going to be ready for week one, if indeed that's how that rule states out? Let's face it, Max Starks sat on the sideline until, you know, week four last year, and the Steelers were able to bring him back. So, in my opinion, if the Steelers do want him back at some point, it would make more sense to let him ride through training camp, get 100% healed from that injury, and then at some point during the season, if you need him, sign him to the 53-man roster.
Yeah, you made up a hypothetical and then decided that's not what you would do, and I agree. That's not what I would do either. So,
well,
yeah,
I mean, what would you do with him? Okay, let's say he's let's say he's ready by week one of the season.
It depends if I need a starting tackle. If I don't need a starting tackle and Jonathan Scott's on my roster and I've drafted another, I do nothing. I mean, if he's ready week one of the season and nobody else has signed him, I don't see the urgency. We can drop 10,000 hypotheticals.
Right, but what I'm trying to get at is here, I'm trying to counteract the reason of why his name is being brought up so much. Yes, Max Starks has talked about it on radio. Yes, Kevin Colbert has talked about him himself. So, you know, that's I'm just trying to say it does not make sense why Colbert would be talking about bringing him back. Either he's ready or he's not.
I think, you know, we'll wait and see. It sounds like he's progressing along just like Baron Batch seems to be progressing, as you would expect from that injury. I think Max Starks is going to go into camp just like he was in the middle of camp last year. He doesn't have a job. If the Steelers, it turns out the Steelers have a need, they may have to make a phone call. But, it's just like Kevin Colbert, I think Colbert said, those who have been terminated are terminated. Now, Max Starks wasn't terminated. He's a free agent. But he made it very clear, Kevin Colbert, that, you know, never say never, but the guys who've been cut from the Steelers, and that list, you know, obviously includes Ward. It includes
James Ferrier.
James Ferrier, Arnaz Battle, Derek McFadden. I don't know where you'd put Aaron Smith on that list exactly either. But those guys, basically, he said they're not coming back. I think the situation is probably slightly different with Max Starks, and I think there can be something different in terms of need with a variety of guys, but I don't expect Max Starks to be back.
Yeah, I think it's 100% predicated on the draft and the speed of his recovery. But I just wanted to clarify where I was coming from on that. You mentioned Baron Batch. He posted a video on his website yesterday updating his status. Evidently, he's been cleared from quote-unquote rehab, and he's got a nice video of him out there at the Steelers facility, practice field, going through the drills and all like that. Really looks good. He claims that his straight line speed is fantastic. He's still working on his cutting ability. He also lists himself, I think, about 90% recovered, which, 7 months is a little over 7 months since the injury had happened. He's got another month or so, or more even, really, before OTA starts. So that'll put him about the, 8.5, 9-month range. And so I would expect he's ready to go, and evidently Tomlin and Colbert think the same thing in their interviews about his status. So I don't expect him to be limited at all around the 9-month mark.
And interesting stuff about the young backs, and in this case Mike Tomlin mentioned, when he was talking about young backs, he's talking about John Clay, he's talking about Jonathan Dwyer. Two guys who have shown that they can carry the ball in the limited time they've been asked to do it. They've been productive with it. Obviously, there's more to the job than just carrying the ball, but Tomlin did say the Steelers may look for help at the running back position, either in free agency or the draft. That's a little bit more of a commitment to adding people into the mix than I would have expected, but we did hear that from him as well, aside from the fact that Baron Batch is going full speed. But I would assume if Baron Batch shows he can go full speed and the other guys are healthy, if that happens through the OTAs, which have officially been announced as taking place from May 22nd till June 14th, I think, the number has been cut from 14 to 10. But if Batch shows that he's 100%, I would suggest that means Mwelde Moore won't be invited to camp initially.
I was asked yesterday, I was on Trib Live Radio, and I was asked by Didi if that's kind of a priority to the Steelers to bring back Mwelde Moore. I see it more as a luxury if you bring him back, just from the sheer point of being able to have him there in case of emergency, push the younger guys on the roster. He's a Mike Tomlin guy coming over with Tomlin from Minnesota when Tomlin arrived. But, I mean, let's face it, Mwelde Moore's best years are behind him. He does a great job picking up the blitz, recognition and all like that. But I would by no means call him a priority. And really, at this point, I could see a different, maybe lower-end, third-down type, veteran-type back that comes in for a minimum before Mwelde Moore is re-signed. But I'm not willing to bet my house saying that Mwelde Moore will not be brought back.
I'd pretty much bet my house Mwelde Moore is not coming back if we go to camp under the current scenario. One is, he's not going to be particularly expensive. He's going to take up some cap room. I just don't see it happening. But, we'll see how that plays out when we get there. In relation to guys who were luxuries, I think William Gay became that guy exactly. He is in the mix at cornerback, a starter two of the last 3 years, and he was there with Keenan Lewis this past year with Brian McFadden, has been released. And then the two third-round and fourth-round pick, Curtis Brown of Texas and Cortez Allen of the Citadel. We saw on Monday or over the weekend, Sunday, that William Gay tweeted that he was part of the Bird Gang West, meant that he had signed a 2-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. I've yet to see terms on that deal, but William Gay, a guy who figured to compete again for the starting quarter spot, certainly could have contributed in the nickel package where he's done very well in the slot. I think the biggest asset he brought versus the talent on the team is he was the best blitzer the Steelers had out of the backfield off the edge. I think he did a very good job of that over the past 2 years. But, as you talked about, it's not the 1970s where you control guys forever, and he became a guy with the development of the young guys coming along who became a luxury, he certainly wasn't going to get a 2-year deal with the Steelers. He got a 2-year deal elsewhere, and off he goes.
I have not seen the terms on that myself outside of the 2-year deal with Arizona. The move makes sense for Arizona, reuniting with Ray Horton and Deshae Townsend, of course, Ken Wisenhunt over there. I'm willing to bet. Colbert said that they had been in touch with him. I'm willing to bet that was a 1-year veteran minimum qualifying contract on the table for Gay. He probably got a little bit bigger of a signing bonus than the $65,000 that he would have got with the Steelers on one of those qualifying contracts. I believe that he firmly believes that he can compete for that outside spot over there in Arizona across from Patrick Peterson over there as well. And Gay would have been a luxury, in my opinion. People I have never been part of the gay, sort of the gay bashers. I hate to use that term, but I mean, it is what it is. Gay had a great year under Carnell Lake last year. I really think Carnell kind of helped him a bit. I think by him playing outside, in regular situations and moving inside into the nickel was a great move by the Steelers. I thought he performed very well there. So the question now becomes, we can't cry over that spilt milk. Where do we go from here? Well, Keenan Lewis is obviously the odds-on favorite to head into camp at the starting left outside corner position. And let's not forget that Cortez Allen saw, a handful of snaps inside and some slot positions, especially in the dime situations. We saw it mostly against the New England Patriots in the game that they played against them. I thought he did a very good job, a very hands-on, a very physical type guy in press situations. I think he could play zone type coverages as very well as well. And the big thing is he got time in that defense coming off of an offseason where there was no OTA sessions or minicamp. So I think that speaks volumes for him. Curtis Brown, hey, I mean, we would be lying to tell everybody what we know about him from a defensive standpoint because he played no downs on defense. Now, I think that he is a guy that can play inside at the slot. I think he's a guy that can also play outside on and back up Ike Taylor on the right side as well. But, right now you got to ask yourself, and I'll ask you, David, is that enough there? And you got to figure now you're going to go into the draft and probably draft a guy fifth, sixth round, probably a young developmental corner. Do you consider bringing in a fringe veteran guy, that maybe has some 3-4 experience type corner via free agency if you can get him on a 1-year qualifying offer?
No, because I think you just let that guy walk. You said William Gay had a great year. I think we tossed that term around very liberally. I think that's overstating it. William Gay is an average to below average NFL corner. That's why I think that's how the Steelers view him. I did love your tweet this morning when you said you wish Tomlin had used the term three dogs, one bone that he used so often with the receivers, Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders at different points. I do think that if you're penciling the depth chart in today, Keenan Lewis is the guy who's at the top of that depth chart. But if you made me kind of put money in each of the three shells in front of me, I wouldn't put more than a third of the money at Keenan Lewis. I'd actually probably at best go a third, a third, a third. And I think you'll see Cortez Allen be at worst the fifth, the nickel corner. He's got a chance to win it. And I think Curtis Brown may very well come out and win that job because I think the Steelers liked with what they had with him. But obviously with no OTAs and very little preseason activity, he probably didn't get the work that he would have. So it'll be interesting. They always say, or they often say that the second year is the year where you see the big jump. I think the Steelers, we didn't see that with Keenan Lewis until the third year. It'll be interesting to see if the Steelers see that in mini camps and in preseason practice, because I think that's probably the most interesting position on the field for the Steelers this coming season to see how that plays out. And you and I have talked about the foot in the thing you wrote about foot being there and Stevenson Sylvester and his ability to maybe compete for that job.
Yeah, and let me go back to this, what you were saying, though, real quick about Curtis Brown. You think he's got a good shot at winning a week one job. I don't. This is a guy that has not seen the field yet. I would say that it's not a slam dunk, though, for Keenan Lewis to win that left outside spot. I think Cortez Allen certainly could press him for that job. Now, that being said, if Cortez Allen wins that left outside corner spot, then I think in nickel situations, I think Keenan Lewis comes into the left outside corner spot and Cortez Allen kicks inside to the nickel role all of the way Gay did last year.
I think that's good. And I just want to – you said he has a good shot. I say I think he'll be in competition – equally with those guys. I wouldn't put him first on the depth chart, but let me just say my jaw wouldn't hit the floor if he won the job. If I had to pick today who's going to win it, I would say Cortez Allen.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Curtis Brown.
I'd like to see Curtis Brown win it because that would mean a lot in terms of his development.
Oh, yeah, absolutely it would. Yeah, what a good problem to have at that point. And real quick on William Gay now. This is a guy that gave up 52.8% completion ratio last year, which was down from the year before, okay? So, and the quarterback rating against, passer rating against, which it's hard to put number, you know, I use NFL passer rating kind of, you know, not a full-blown stat you can nail down, but 71.7 against him last year when thrown at. He defensed 9 passes, gave up only 3 touchdowns, intercepted 2 balls. Also, very good after the catch as far as not giving up yak yards. So, I think you might be underselling William Gay just a little bit for his play last year. Is it a huge loss? No, it's not. I'm going to tell you, it's not a huge loss. It would have been a luxury, though, to have him there, though, for depth purposes, though. But back to the foot Sylvester thing. We just don't know what we have in Stevenson Sylvester. The guy's played under 75 snaps in 2 seasons. His rookie season, a few of his snaps were late in blowout games, and he even lined up outside. Last year, a handful of those snaps that he played inside were snaps that came at in kneel-down type situations. So realistically, this guy's probably got about 55 true defensive snaps to his name inside, and I'm not convinced right now. I need to see more that he can handle that buck linebacker role where your primary responsibilities are meeting fullbacks, meeting lead blockers in the hole, not letting guards get to the second level and all like that. And one of the knocks on Sylvester coming out was just that. He's a guy that did not play well in space, better in drops, better in pass coverage than he was actually inside. So, you know, he too missed those OTA sessions, which would really have been critical for his jump last year, and thus probably led to him not getting a lot of playing time, of course, last year. I think Larry Foote's the odds-on favorite right now to win that spot. Of course, I think they're going to draft a guy perhaps like Dante Hightower as an example in round one. Tomlin's come right out and said that inside linebacker is probably going to be a position they draft during the draft. It's pretty obvious anybody that covers the Steelers, that's a need going forward. But even anybody that they draft this year, it's hard envisioning them seeing the field year one as a rookie in a Dick LeBeau run defense in a 3-4 scheme inside like that. Now, Hightower might give you some abilities to move around outside and inside in special down and distance situations, but Sylvester is definitely one. You know, according to Tomlin, Kevin Colbert, he's going to be given the opportunity to battle with Foote. So that's going to be a fun thing to watch, OTA sessions and training camp as well.
Yeah, that's the other battle that, yeah, we'll see what happens with the draft choices. But, yeah, in terms of veterans in the camp, those are two positions, obviously, to keep an eye on. Dave, one of the things that we'll see with William Gay signing away is the Steelers will most likely get a compensatory pick next year. And we finally got the information for this year's compensatory picks, and it came out yesterday that the Steelers will get 3 compensatory picks because Nick Eason, Matt Spaeth, and Kieron Fox left the team. The guys, Jamon Meredith, has signed away. He may not add to that haul next year.
He won't. He won't because he was technically a street free agent when he was not tendered.
Okay, great. Certainly, guys, the situation with guys like James Ferrier, I assume – if you're released, I assume that means he won't add anything if he signs away.
That's correct. They have to leave via free agent. They have to be an unrestricted type. Meredith was a restricted free agent and not tendered, and basically he became basically a street free agent at that point. None of the guys that were released will qualify that. Gay will, and the level of compensation, of course, will determine on how that contract value shakes out, playing time that he gets, any postseason yep. honors, and if the Steelers sign any unrestricted free agents, which is very unlikely that they will, to replace him. All that plays into that formula, which I'd really love to get my hands on. It's never been made public by the Players Management Council and all, but they will get 3 7-round picks, as you mentioned, this year, and everybody automatically, they want to take the negative side of it and say, well, that's great. We get 3 more draft picks that we're going to cut in camp. That very well could be, but what it does give you the ability to do, and we talk about this on your show this morning, David, on ESPN 970, you know, A, it gives you the ability maybe to move around some of those other picks, maybe a 5th and a 6th and your original 7th, maybe to move up maybe to the top of round 5 if they have some guys that they have their eyes on. Another thing that allows you to do is it allows you not to get into a bidding war after the draft on some of these top undrafted free agents. And as you mentioned, maybe a kicker, maybe a punter in seventh round to come in to compete with Sean Swisham and Kapanos as well. You know, a lot of times after the draft with these undrafted free agents, these kids, it's actually a good position for them to be in instead of being drafted late in the seventh round, because they really get to pick at that point in time, if there's heavy demand for them, which team that they want to go to, what signing bonus that they get, and maybe what would be the best opportunity for them to possibly crack the 53-man roster. So don't, you know, basically I'm not trying to say that everything's going to turn, every one of these seventh-round picks is going to be a Brett Kiesel by any means, but we have seen Brett Kiesel, you know, seventh-round draft pick. Baron Batch probably would have made the 53-man roster last year as a seventh-round draft pick. David Johnson made a roster a few years ago after he was drafted in the seventh round. So, you know, I kind of consider this unscratched lottery tickets that you found on the street, David. You don't know unless you scratch them.
Yep, and the exact numbers of the draft positions are 240, 246, 248. There'll be 253 picks in this year in this year's draft. There were 32 compensatory picks given out to 15 teams, and as Dave said, there's a magic box that they put a piece of paper into, and it spits out the answer as to what level it is. The highest pick was given to Oakland, the 95th pick, and that. In the third round, Oakland, in terms of what they lost Nnamdi Asamoah, Robert Gallery, Bruce Gradkowski, Zach Miller, and Thomas Howard, and only signed two more minor names, Kevin Boss and Stephen Heyer. So that's why they've got a third, fourth, and a fifth round pick, which will certainly help to supplement their position, because they gave some picks away in the Carson Palmer trade. But that's basically the issue, and I do like the idea, and I have to actually give credit to one of our listeners, Elliot Eubanks, who emailed us and talked about this, about whether the Steelers might package things and what they might do with these picks, because I do think the idea of taking a kicker and or a punter with those late picks, because you're only going to have so many bodies in competing for positions. If you like a guy, certainly take him, but it is a way to maybe get the best or the second or third best punter and kicker in the college crop into your program, into the fall preseason camp, and take a look at them and have them compete. I mean, I'm a fan of both guys who have the jobs currently. I know Sushi's not a big fan of a lot of Steeler fans, a lot of Steeler fans aren't a big fan of his, but I'm a big fan. I think the guy did a very comparable job last year, and I'd be perfectly content to have both of those guys go in holding their jobs this coming year. But also a fan of using a pick or two to always bring in competition, and those spots should have competition as well.
And yeah, if you look at the roster right now, even after all the future contract guys have been signed right now, they don't have, you know, all they have is just that, you know, of course they tendered exclusive rights free agent Jeremy Kapanos, so we know for sure he'll be back. Sushi's already under contract. They signed him to basically an extension, but by no means does that make him safe based on his signing bonus. So yeah, Elliot Eubanks makes a good point that we definitely could see a kicker or a punter drafted in those seventh round compensatory picks, and at very worst, one of each signed as undrafted, if that's not the case during that seventh round.
Okay, Dave, that pretty much covered most of the things that went on this week down at the owners' meeting. You know, we've discussed the rule changes. It is pretty much a little bit of a self-congratulatory week down there where the owners get together. They did vote 29-0 today to uphold the penalties against the Cowboys and the Redskins. One team abstained on that vote. Everybody else voted for it, so they'll move forward. The Cowboys will be docked $10 million over 2 years, and the Redskins $36 million. And my belief is that will really impact the Redskins' ability to compete over these 2 years. We'll see what they can put together, but it's going to make it a heck of a lot tougher than it would be otherwise. The other news of the week, the big story, I think the overarching story is what's going on with Bountygate and the Saints being in contact with Bill Parcells. We'll see how that plays out. And, of course, Tebow introduced in New York at the press conference yesterday, and that was a bit of a circus, but I think he handled himself incredibly well. You know, obviously this has been discussed at length. The Jets are going to run a package for Tim Tebow, 10 to 20 plays each week. Tony Sperano had a lot of success with the Wildcat down in Miami. Rex Ryan is willing to experiment with things. It seems like the coaching staff is on board. We don't know exactly Mark Sanchez's response, but my view is if your franchise quarterback is too fragile for having competition, then you've got bigger issues. But we'll see how that goes. You know, there's been speculation from this is the dumbest idea ever to this is costing them nothing, and it's a fantastic idea. We'll see how it plays out. One of the interesting things is, of course, in the schedule, is the Steelers do get the Jets next year, and Steeler fans will get to watch it up close and personal. And the big advantage for the Jets, I think, in this idea is when you put together packages that other teams don't use at all, it forces the team each week that you're going to play against to spend time preparing for something that they're only going to see once. And that's there is an advantage in that. You know, game planning is a part of this league, a big part of this league, and we'll see how that all plays out. And, Dave, the other piece of news that I thought was most interesting for Steeler fans maybe, it's come out, reported by the Denver Post, that it looks like the opening Sunday night game of the NFL season is either going to be Pittsburgh at Denver, in which case Ryan Clark won't be playing in the opener, or Denver at New England. So that's something that just came across Twitter earlier this afternoon. Something to think about. That would obviously potentially rule the Steelers out as the opening game against the New York Giants in New York, but maybe part of that initial weekend.
Yeah, Mike Kliss reported that in the Denver Post this morning. As you said, I've got a write-up coming up on that. He says that New Orleans Saints might have been in the running for that, but do you think that there's no way coming off of the bounty gate that they showcased the Saints in week one? I think he tries to rule out Kliss tries to roll out the Patriots, too, because I believe that game is in New England, and they would rather have Peyton Manning in his own home, his own new home of Denver as a week one game. And you know, it's hard to start off a week one minus Ryan Clark, but, I mean, let's face it, at some point they're going to have to play Denver anyway. So, you know, I guess week one's as good as any, but it's yet to be determined. The NFL schedule, I believe, gets released late in April there when a lot of this is nailed down for sure. I'm sure the opening week game, the Wednesday night game that the Giants have, will be leaked a lot earlier than that, as well will this Sunday night game and possibly the Monday night game as well, too. So kind of look for that later in April there. You mentioned the
– Dave, if I remember correctly, they play two Monday night games that opening week, don't they?
They
play a 7 o'clock and a 10 o'clock.
Yeah, they very possibly could. So, you know, that definitely could be an option as well. I don't think I've officially heard that will be this year, but I think the last few years that has. So, I mean, that's definitely something to consider there. You mentioned the owner's vote today. You reckon Al Davis took part in that?
He abstained.
Yeah. And how?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the other kind of stuff that we can kind of wrap up with here. You know, we've talked about let's start talking about a little bit of draft in this last little bit. A lot of people have been wanting to talk about it. We mentioned a few of the names there. You know, this T.Y. Hilton kid that you mentioned earlier, he's a very interesting specimen player there out of Florida International. Doesn't get huge play, as you said, 5'10", 183 pounds, had 72 receptions for 1,000 yards. Seven touchdowns, projected kind of third or fourth round guy. This guy can burn it. You want to talk about it? God forbid some reason that Mike Wallace was to go somewhere this year or even next year, you know, if he's not signed to a long-term deal. This guy clocked, I think, 4.38 and 4.28 at his pro day. So this is a guy, definitely a developmental guy, but, hey, the Steelers have had good luck in third, fourth, fifth, you know, kind of six rounds, especially with Antonio Brown, of finding these guys. The Derek Wolfe kid that they brought in, you know, great looking five technique specimen, 70 tackles, 9.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles last year with Cincinnati. I think the Steelers have legitimate interest in him. I think he was a name that they kind of visited with down there at the NFL Combine. It would not surprise me if the Steelers took another defensive end at some point during this draft this year, because let's face it, Brett Kiesel's not getting any younger. There's kind of concern still with if Ziggy Hood's a true five technique outside. Of course, they drafted Cameron Hayward last year in the first round. But, you know, keep an eye on this kid. A guy probably projected fourth or fifth round. definitely could see him in a Steelers uniform. Mike Adams, I just don't know about this guy as far as the 5 cent head issue we talked about earlier there. We'll be getting into a lot more of these players as these pre-draft visits are made public, which the Steelers haven't been as forthcoming in previous years about. But as you said, this type of stuff leaks out through Twitter. The players themselves will announce it. Their agents are not shy about letting it be known which guys are going somewhere. So that's a quick rundown on the three guys that have already visited with the Steelers. Of course, the Pitt players, as we mentioned earlier as well. So if anybody has any questions, now the compensatory picks are up. I'll be having my version 3.0 of my mock draft out later this week, more than likely. And I accept all feedback on that as well. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Follow David on Twitter @HammerSpeaks. You can follow me on Twitter @SteelersDepot. We love these questions. This is a perfect time of the year for us to get one or two questions from emailers in or from any Twitter followers as well. The outpouring of support for the show has been absolutely fantastic.
Yep, Dave, you said it all right there. A couple articles I'll just point people to if they want to read about some of this stuff. CBS.com had an article on two receivers, a kid from South Dakota State, and a kid from a very small school in Alabama, two guys who put up crazy, crazy combine-type numbers at their pro days where they actually, I think, went to different schools. The small school in Alabama, he had to go to Alabama State's pro day to do it, and the kid from South Dakota State, I think they did have a pro day up his way. I'll try to put up a link on Twitter. You can find that. Also, Sigmund Bloom wrote about both these guys on Bleacher Report. And then there's an article on Grantland that came out on the 23rd by the guy who runs smartfootball.com, the guy Chris Brown. He does some really good work. It's called Why Tebow Should Work with the New York Jets. And he goes through all this basic fundamental analysis and play structuring and what the offenses are trying to do against defenses. It's good X's and O's football. If you want to read some stuff about that, I'll point you to both those articles and hope you enjoy them. As Dave said, thank you for all the support. Continue the feedback. Continue the questions. We enjoy that stuff. And we'll be back with you Friday. If there's a slow time of year, it's not really now coming into the draft. It'll be the week, the 2 weeks in May before OTAs start. But thanks again for listening to the Terrible Podcast, Season 2, Episode 91 with Dave and Dave.